Welcome to Prison, the Hidden Sentence, raising awareness and providing education and insights for individuals and families with incarcerated loved ones, educating and empowering through personal stories of those affected by and involved with our prison population.
Hi, this is Julia from Prison, the Hidden Sentence. My brother was in prison for 15 years, and during that time, I learned a lot about the prison system, but there were still a lot of things that I didn't know. My hope is that the stories and information provided in these podcasts and in our blog provide support to those of you who have a loved one in prison, as well as raise awareness on how it affects friends, family, and society. Hi, Yvonne. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today. We spoke about your dad being in prison in the previous podcast, but you told me your mom was also in prison, and this story is amazing. I mean, when you told me what you did to take care of your family, I thought anyone that thought they had too much on their plate had to listen to this. So during that time that your dad was in prison and you were living with your mom, you were telling me that there was also a period that your mom was incarcerated and your dad wasn't available. So how did you feel having both of your parents incarcerated as a kid? I couldn't even imagine.
Yes, well, thankfully, my mother did not get incarcerated until I was about to graduate from high school, whereas my father was in and out since, as I said, about age 5 or 6. But my mother was fighting a case. For 8 years, she appealed her charges and her court sentence. And finally, at the end of all of these string of appeals, she ended up having to go serve time. But during that appeal period, she was divorced from my father. She had a man that she dated and had known for a long time, eventually did marry. But the interesting thing is, before she was taken into custody to go start her sentence, she was 6 months pregnant. She was 45 years old, so she was a high-risk pregnancy. And she went in knowing she was going to have to deliver this baby, and the burden on her of what she was going to do, she had about a year and a half sentence to serve, actually serve. The sentence was longer, I think it was 3 years, but she served about a year and a half. And it was really stressful. I was 18 years old, and I had just graduated from high school. She had gone into custody before my graduation ceremony, so she wasn't able to attend, but my dad was. He was there.
Okay, so at this point,
your dad was in prison, and your dad is supporting you. Yes, now my dad was supporting me, exactly. Because he was just a revolving door, you know, so he just happened to be out during the time that I was graduating from high school. So my mom was very upset that she could not attend. She was very hurt because she felt she had been involved in our lives a lot more, and she was. She was the mainstay and the more stable of the two, and she just happened to be taken into custody a few months before I graduated, so it was very a very somber time for her.
What about you? You must have felt horrible not having your mom at your graduation.
I did. It was nice that I had two staff members from the Explorer Scouts, two deputies that were full-time active police officers, and their wives came to support me, and they took me out to dinner after the graduation, which was really nice. They did support me and tried to fill that gap a little bit. And so I took pictures and showed my mom when I went to visit her next, because I would go and see her every Sunday at the California Institute for Women. I would take after, well, let me back up a little bit. I did see her after my graduation, and I would visit her every Sunday with my younger two sisters before she had the baby. Then she was released for 3 months to be able to deliver the baby, stabilize her, my little sister Heather, stabilize her, and then she had to go and turn herself back in.
So she was home for 3 months.
She was home for 3 months.
So you were saying that you graduated high school when she was taken into custody.
Yes.
And you had two younger siblings.
Yes.
Were you living at home at the time?
Yes, we were living in our family home we had been in for 15, 16 years, and
you became the caretaker?
I became the caretaker of my younger sister, who was, one of them was 14, one was 11. I had an older sister who was there, but unfortunately she was floundering. She was on and off of drugs. She had a son. I was taking care of him too. He was 4 or 5. So we were all trying to make it in this, at least we had a home to live in. But that was another problem too, because now who was going to make the house payment? Well, that house payment was not able to be made. My older sister did, she did get possession of a check. My parents had, my dad actually helped with this, process a claim for a homeowner's insurance claim for wind and rain damage to our roof. So it took a few months, but eventually a $5,000 check came in. Well, my mother didn't give that check to me. She gave it to my older sister, who was on drugs. So that money did not go, needless to say, did not go towards saving the house. That would have gone a long way. Our house payment was only $750 at the time.
Wow.
For a very nice home with a pool, and it was beautiful. We were in a middle-class, upper-middle-class neighborhood. But that money frittered away. And my mother said to me when I went to visit her, she said, I knew the minute I handed that check over to your sister that it was gone and I shouldn't have done it. So anyway, that put us on the fast track to foreclosure. So that was a whole other side issue brewing. But my mother came home, had the baby, stayed a few months, then she had to go back in. I was not living at home at that time because she was there, and I couldn't get along with my older sister very well. We were just clashing. She was just in a whole other world and had a lot of unscrupulous people at our house, you know. And anyway, so my mother asked me to go home about 2 months after the baby was, after she left, and the baby was there being taken care of by my 14-year-old and my 11-year-old sisters. My older sister was just in and out. She was in her own world. So my neighbor called me and said, Yvonne, you need to come back home and take care of your sisters because they need you. I'm seeing your younger sisters walking up and down the street carrying the baby, visiting their friends at the neighbors' houses. And I said, okay, all right. So I did, and tried to pull the household together as best I could. And I can remember, this is so interesting, because I can remember I was working full-time. We all, the younger two and I, were really like the mainstay. My brother wasn't living with us at the time, but we operated like, we just stepped it up and had to do night duty. My younger sister, Lisa, did night duty with the baby. She was 11. She would get up in the middle of the night, get the baby a bottle, change the diapers, put her back to bed, and she was in elementary school.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. And then I was playing the mom and dad role, going to work, taking the baby to the nursery, the daycare, taking my other sisters to school. Our days started very early, but we managed. We did it. And I can remember this is a very interesting little story, because my older sister had frittered the money away. The groceries had to be purchased by me so I could feed our younger sisters. I really didn't worry about my older sister. It was me down, mm-hmm. and that was it. I'm just worried about taking care of us. And her son, by the way.
And how old was her son?
Her son was about 4 or 5.
Who watched him during the day?
He was in daycare. I'm not quite sure how she was able to manage that, but he was in preschool or daycare, or maybe the dad, her boyfriend sort of helped. He was in and out. Well, the interesting thing was, so I would buy the groceries for the family, and if my sister Vicky was able to contribute something, it was just a bonus. But I didn't rely on it. Well, my nephew was constantly eating all the snacks as soon as he got home from school. He would just raid the kitchen, unsupervised. So I can remember thinking, okay, I have to ration the food out so that I can have things for the kids' lunches, my lunch, and we had to make it last each week. We were on a serious budget. I was earning $5 an hour as a legal secretary.
Wow.
And so...
things were a little cheaper back then.
They were a little cheaper, but still trying to make that... Yeah. that stretch was tough. And at that point, too, my younger sister, Heather, she had to be put in daycare. There was bottle supplies that we needed and baby food and all that. Well, finally, her father started to send me money to help with those expenses. He was in an alcoholic rehab facility somewhere. So I'm thinking, okay, great. You know, but at least I was grateful for whatever I got. $75 a week was the fee for the nursery care. At least that was being covered. So I assemble this box of food, and I put it in the closet. I'm occupying the master bedroom at this point, and my younger sister, Stacy, she's 14, so her and I are sharing the master bedroom in the king-size bed, right, and I have my parents' closets, and I put this box of food up there, and I don't tell my older sister that it's there, right? So I remember getting a call at work one day, and she just lays into me how angry she is that she found this box of food. How dare you hide food from the family? And she went off on me.
Oh, thinking that you hid it from everybody to keep it for yourself.
Right, right.
Oh, wow.
So I had to go into my boss's office, close the door, and we had this conversation, you know, and I said, I'll have to talk to you when I get home. I'm at work right now, but I can assure you I'm not hiding the food from the family. Those are school day supplies for lunches and for my lunches. And every day I'd come home, and if your son was there, he would raid the kitchen. He would eat up all of those things that were designed for the lunches. So she calmed down, but I constantly was having run-ins with my older sister, which is really why I didn't want to move back up to our house, but I did it for our younger sisters. I just thought to myself, I'm going to look backward one day, and my younger sisters are going to be very thankful that I at least came up to our house to take care of them. So I'm doing it for them. So anyway, there was this one event. I haven't mentioned this to you. This is really a story. So we're all women at the house, right? All of us. There's just all of these sisters living there except for my little nephew. And occasionally my older sister's friends are coming in and out. They're just partiers. They used our house as a flop house. And there was this one day that the phone rang in our house, and I was trying to get ready for work, and I sent my younger sister in the back bedroom because my older sister had the phone in her room. I said, please go in to Vicky's room and answer the phone. And she came running back, and she said, Yvonne, come here, look. You've got to come see this. I go into the bedroom. And of course, it was a mess, and there was, like, drug paraphernalia around. And there was this strange man in the back bedroom that my sister had brought to live there sleep there for a few nights. I had no idea he was there. There's young girls there, I'm there, and my sister mentioned nothing about it. She just had this guy, this big guy in the back bedroom. And I was so appalled, but I just looked at him. I said, excuse me, I'm Yvonne, I live here. I need to answer my phone. And so I went across and I answered the phone, and my sister wasn't even home. So we had our morning routine, we had to get out of there and get to work and everything, get to school. But I called her when I got to work. I went back into my boss's office, and I caught her at home. And I laid into her. I just told her off so strongly. I was furious that she would put us at risk like that. Another time, I woke up in the middle of the night, and my younger sister, Stacy, she's the 14-year-old at this time, I hear her talking to someone in the living room. So I get up, and I go out to see what's going on, and there's two drug dealers in our house, and my sister, Vicky, is in the back with one of them, and my younger sister, Stacy, is talking to these men in the living room. In the middle of the night. Oh, man, I couldn't stand it. I wanted her out of there so badly, I just could not stand it. We were constantly clashing. There was a time that she had to leave our house for about 2 weeks because not only was my older sister a drug user, but she started to deal in order to pay for her own drug use. So there was a time she could not pay for her supply or her order, whatever it was, and she was afraid they were going to come after her. She was afraid they would do something to our household, to us, the family members. So she just stayed away. Didn't hear from her for 2 weeks. So I'm just taking care of her son, just trying to keep my routine going. Every Sunday, we're going to see my mom. I'm taking my younger sisters, not so much my nephew.
Who watched the baby, or did the baby come with you?
The baby always came with us.
Okay.
I took the baby with me and my other two younger sisters. All three of us in my little 67 Volkswagen Beetle, tootling out to Fontana every Sunday, where my mom is serving time with the Manson women. So it was quite an interesting experience. We're going in there, carrying this little baby carrier, signing everybody in, and, my mom's there serving time. I see Leslie Van Houten every week, and it was really, really very interesting. Very interesting dynamic.
It's surreal.
It was very surreal. Yeah, these women committed heinous crimes, and I'm seeing two of them that were serving time.
And you knew who they were.
I knew who they were. Oh, sure. My mom would point them out. So that was a whole other culture to get used to. But we had lunch out there on Sundays, and my mom got to connect with the younger kids, and she really appreciated that. And it really made the time go by so quickly by having this regular schedule, and we were just trying to do life together, my siblings and I, to get through it. Wait till my mom could get home and regain control over the household. I was just trying to fill in for her and just tolerate my older sister and her behavior. And she was, she was just a mess at the time. And that's a whole other story. But I was trying to cope with that. So my mom is relying on me now, to take care of the household and the kids and keep everybody in school and just keep everything going. And it just had to be done. It was very different than my dad expecting me to help because kids don't have a choice. They're little. They don't know. It's not their fault. So I had to step in for their sake to take care of them and make sure they weren't being taken advantage of. Who knows what would have happened to my teenage sister if she would have been there alone. And my older sister has no regard for us at all or them. She's only in her own world dealing drugs and using drugs and in just floundering. I remember my older sister coming in one evening, and I'm at my mother's desk, in the master bedroom and I was paying bills. And she walked in, she was going to ask me a question. She looked down and saw all these bills on the desk and what I'm trying to process. She said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're doing that. There's no way I could handle any of that." And she just walked out. And she's 7 years older than I am, right? And I just looked at her. I said, "Yeah, I know. I know. Okay." So I was running a household at 18 to 19 years old.
Then when your mom came back, you moved out?
Then when my mom came back, she showed up in the middle of the night. I don't know what it is about, you know, inmate returns. It's always a middle of the night return. And she showed up with her husband, because all of a sudden he got out around the same time, or maybe he was out, he was just trying to time it with her return. He had gotten out of his rehab program, and he was going to return with her, and they were going to start anew. So we remained in the home. The home was in foreclosure. If it hadn't been for the fact that I was working for a law office, and they were making calls on my behalf to try to stall the foreclosure, which was stalled and continued for a year, absolutely a miracle, because I had no place to take these kids. And it just worked out. I remember coming home and seeing notice after notice, notice of foreclosures being posted on our front door, that in X amount of days, this house is going to trustee sale. And I would rip that notice off, march right into the bedroom, put it on the master bed, get on my knees, and lift it up to God and say, "God, here you go. I'm doing the best I can. What are you going to do about this? I can't do anything about it. This is so far beyond me. I'm making $5 an hour. What am I going to do? I have these kids to take care of, but I know, since I'm doing the best I can, that if you have to drop it from the heavens, you will. You will drop some kind of help." And you know what he did? He said, "Go and talk to your boss." I was working for three different attorneys, and he told me which one to go and talk to, the senior one. And he made the phone calls for me on a regular basis and got it postponed up until my mother, 2 months after my mother returned, we were able to stay in that house. And it was good because she needed that time to mentally regroup. Getting used to not being told what to do, when to go to the bathroom, when to eat, and to get on her own schedule and take care of a baby. I remember the first time she did find a job and everything, and the first time she was getting ready to go to work, she was in and out of the car three or four times because she kept forgetting things. It was all still new to her again. So we stayed there until it went into foreclosure, and then I got a really nice size income tax refund. My mother had done my return, made me head of household, because I was. Okay. You know, in the end of the day, I was. So I got that tax credit. And when the refund check came, it was almost $5,000,
wow.
I think. Yeah. I handed the full refund over to her, and we found a house to rent. She relocated down into Orange County, and I stayed there very briefly, just long enough to help her with the transition. And then I moved, once I knew she was stable. And then I just launched her and let her resume her maternal duty so that I could go to school. I wanted to go to college. So that's what I did. I returned back to Pasadena and I went to junior college and continued working. But it was a lot of responsibility, a lot of work, a lot of stress. But I'm so grateful. And our sisters, you know, made it through.
How are your sisters now?
They're doing fine. They're doing great. They're married. They have families. And my older brother as well. And I'm just glad that I did it. For my own peace of mind, I owed it to them, because who knows what would have happened. And when my neighbor called me and said, "You need to get up here," she was like an adopted auntie. And I said, "Okay, I better respect what she's saying and do it. She's seeing what I'm not seeing every day." And she said, "It's out of control over there. You better get home and take care of your sisters." So
when this was all over, I just kind of think that a lot of your feelings must have been suppressed, because when you were doing things, when you're doing what you know you need to do, going through the motions and taking care of other people, and you're outside of yourself, when it's all over, did you decompress somewhere?
Well, I sort of decompressed along the way, because I did have a lot of support from church and church members, and I was part of a regular Bible study, and that was another avenue where people were so generous to me and would bless me. People would come up to me and say, "I know what you're going through. I really felt led to give you a gift. Let's just take this." And I would get checks in the mail. I would get money orders in the mail anonymously. So God really provided. But I would rely heavily on my faith, and I would talk to a couple of people that were like mentors to me, and it helped me so much. And again, they focused on, you need to do the right thing to take care of your sisters and give them a chance. So I did decompress that way, and I also was very, at this point, I'm full on adult responsibilities, and I'm talking to my parents on that level, and that helped a lot. And my mother was always very, very grateful. And my dad, he unfortunately was sort of exploiting the situation, because I remember him coming over and wanting all the kids' names and if they had a social security number, and I believe he was getting benefits for them. I'm taking care of the kids, but he applied for some kind of aid, I think, or was declaring them as dependents or something. But I was the one really taking care of them. So he was just that way, he just used the system any way he could to benefit himself. The other thing is, with my dad, I remember after I had left my mom, made sure she was settled in Orange County, she was taking care of the kids on her own, and I moved back in with my dad because I needed to go to school. And he was totally supportive of school. He wanted me to do that. He said, I want you to go to school so you don't have to look over your shoulder like I've had to do all my life. Who's watching me? Am I going to get caught for doing this and so? He embraced that. He welcomed me to come home, and I shared this home with him. And I remember one day at the breakfast table, he handed me a nice little stack of utility bills. He had the nerve to say, here, Yvonne, I think it's time that you pay some utility bills and learn how to be a responsible adult.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, can you believe that? And I just sat there and I took a deep breath and I took that stack of bills and I slid it back to him across the table and I said, I was taking care of your kids when you should have been doing it. I know what it is to run a household and be a responsible adult. You can take care of these while I'm going to school now. It's my turn. And you know what? He did it. He didn't say another word to me about it. He just took it and walked away. I guess you're right. And that was it. I thought that was very interesting that he would say that to me after I was taking care of his kids. Yeah, I said, I don't think so, Buster. You know,
yeah.
I was like, no, 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 no. So another thing that happened while I was living at that house with him, after my mom is settled and everything, I'm back with my dad. I'm attending college full-time and I'm working part-time. And there were two occasions I came home to the house being in complete disarray and upheaval because we had the courtesy of the police department rummaging through everything due to a search warrant. And I go into the bedroom, my bedroom, and everything is just dumped, piled on the middle of the bed. And I said, what happened here? What is going on, Dad? And he said, I'm really sorry. He was so embarrassed. I'm really sorry, but the police department came here. They had a search warrant. I had to let them in. And I told them, don't go in your room. I told them, you didn't have anything to do with this. But they just insisted. I said, well, of course, the minute you say that, that's the first place I would go.
Right.
So he said, I'm really sorry. What can I do to help you put this together? And I was so mad at him. I just laid into him. I let him have it. I went into a tirade. I said, I'm so sick and tired of this.
Yeah.
Why am I being subjected to this? If I'm even remotely near you, you're infecting me. You're infecting my life. I don't need this, Dad. I'm trying to go to school. I have nothing to do with your illegal activity. So it did. It happened twice, and I was just livid. So you know what he did? I have to tell you, this is very interesting, because I decided I'm going to do a little spin on this, and we'll just see where this goes. Maybe he'll learn something. So one morning, I decided I'm going to tell him I'm not going to school anymore, and he noticed. He said, why aren't you in school? You're usually gone about this time. I said, yeah, you know, I've been thinking about it, but with all this disruption, it's hard for me to concentrate. I can't stay focused on my school. So I decided I'm going to stop attending USC, and I'm going to just join your team and do what you do. I'm just going to quit college. It served you pretty well. I'll just do what you do. And he looked at me, and he sat down at the breakfast table and said, no, 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 no. I want you to finish school. I cannot have you trying to live like I live. Really, you cannot do this, Yvonne. So I said, okay, well, I really can't concentrate while I'm here. So until things change, I'm going to put my school on hold and I'll just work full time and I'll save up the money so I can move out. Well, the next day, he moved out. And he left his dog there so that in his mind he's thinking, you know, he's keeping me secure. And he would come regularly to check his mail, check his voicemail messages. He wouldn't stop doing what he's doing, mind you. But he moved out so that I could concentrate. And that was one of the things that just bonded, to in my mind, really bonded my love for him in spite of all of the all the illegal activity he has done, because he cared enough about my life and my education and my future to move out. And he still paid all the bills. And I had to put up with different strange people coming to the door trying to make a buy. My dad's selling drugs, right? They're trying to make a buy. And so I had to tell them, look, he's not here anymore. Shop is closed. Don't come here anymore. And I know some of them were undercover police officers. And there was an occasion where I had the full-on uniformed officers and a couple of detectives come to our door and wanting to talk to my dad or wanting to come in. I said, you know what? Come on in. I opened the door. You don't need a search warrant. You just come on in. If there's anything you find here, you take it. If my dad is doing anything illegal, he needs to go to jail. you just come right on in. And I walked them through the entire house. And that was the thing that kept me safe, because I used to tell my dad, I'm going to walk in the light. If you're going to do something illegal, and if I find out about it, any details at all, I will sing like a mockingbird. So you better not tell me anything. Don't bring it here. Don't talk about it here. Don't have your customers come here. I want nothing to do with it. Do you understand? So you know what? He finally switched and just rerouted all of his activities elsewhere. I don't even know where. So that I could go to school. And that just touched me. And I just thought, wow, he really, really wants me to do this. So I did get through school. And I tell you, when I got my diploma, he said, Yvonne, please make a photocopy of your diploma and get it framed for me. And he had that up in his office until he didn't have an office anymore. It's all packed away in his stuff. I thought it was so funny because he felt like he contributed to that, and he did. And that has just always stuck with me. And I tell my kids, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the fact that Grandpa sacrificed and did what he did right by me, as they say. He did make some exceptions. He wouldn't stop doing what he's doing, but he didn't do it around me long enough so I could get through school, which really, really touched me. And that spoke volumes. So that was really an interesting thing to mention.
No, I think that's really important. And it makes sense for, you know, everything that you're still doing and your connection with him.
Yeah. And I've told him that in these later years. I've said to him, I really appreciate what you've done for me in terms of school. He made good suggestions for me on my first real estate purchase. He found a duplex for me that had fallen out of escrow, and because of the fact that he knew the broker, he made contact with me right away and said, this broker is willing to put you right into the buyer's position if you want to do this. And he gave me the money to start with that. And I just thought, wow. Because I had my boundaries and he knew that I wasn't going to go down that road with him, he respected that a lot. And so he thought, okay, you have a chance. Let me help you down this road. So I'm always very grateful, and I tell our kids, we wouldn't even be in the home we're in, because if I hadn't sold that duplex, I wouldn't have had the money to put down on the house that we're currently in, that our family, my kids have grown up in, and the only home they know. So he made some good choices in regards to me. I think because I just took a stand and said, you know, I'm not going to live like you are. And there's a way, there's a better way you can make it in life without having to defraud people, get involved in selling drugs or stolen checks or whatever he was involved in. So it didn't change him in terms of his activity, but at least he made way for me, which I'm so grateful.
And I just think of everything you're telling me and everything you went through with your mom and taking care of the kids and your dad's illegal activities when you were around. And I think it was really great that you had the support that you did, and you kind of went around what he was doing by working with the police department, doing what you were doing. And I just have to think that it's really fortunate that the family wasn't involved with anything, you know, especially when you were an adult. If you were around any illegal activities, if you mm-hmm. had done anything around you, that you could very well be in that situation where you would be arrested. So even though mm-hmm. he did things that were below the law,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that he didn't involve you. So I think it's very fortunate and gave you the opportunities that you have now.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree. And I was very strong and arched the other direction. I was very pro-law enforcement, very pro-justice. You know, I was in the legal field. I wanted to be a police officer when I was a teenager and in the Explorer Scouts. And then I eventually decided not to, but it was a good experience for me. And I felt that it was a good balance for me, having had parents that were both convicted felons, and seeing that side of life and then seeing and working in the legal side, I felt gave me good perspective. And I would say another interesting note, I was always able to use this background to help me in jury duty, because I know the inside story, having worked in the jails and been on patrol. I know some of the things that the officers do to cover their stories and back each other's reports and all of that. But at the same time, I know the inmate side. I know the proposed criminal or the suspect person. And it gave me good perspective to balance things out and to look at things from each side and to try to come up with the truth in things. So it made for very interesting voir dire questions in jury duty. And when the district attorney's office would find out that I had convicted criminal parents and convicted felons, and then there were lines of questions that sometimes they would they thought, okay, she's a great candidate. And there were other times the prosecution, the defense side, would dismiss me, thinking I was maybe too pro-law enforcement, too favorable. Anyway, it was very interesting to get out of jury duty sometimes because of that. I have both sides. I actually did get selected for one jury and thought I was a pretty good influence in the jury room and during the deliberations. So it was interesting. It was a lot of hard experience, but it was good experience to have behind me and looking forward to kind of weigh things in society. So, it's been very interesting. And it's been nice to stay on. I just come right out and tell my dad, you know, I'm not going down the fraud road with you. Because he did come to me and ask me to do something, and I said, you know, why would you even ask me to do that? I'm not doing that for you. Don't even ask me. Don't ask me to sign this, sign that. I'm not doing that. Let's just go in. If this is what you want, if this is your desired goal and your objective, let's just go in and tell the truth. How about that for a change? And he just shakes his head like, okay, I guess I have to remember who I'm talking to, you know. But I really just had to take a firm stand with him. And he has to work with me on those terms or just leave me alone. So he knows that.
It's good to know where you stand. You know, one thing our listeners don't know is that your mom is white and your dad is black. And we had spoken about whether that was any impact on your growing up, and you said not really. It's really interesting. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. I remember growing up not really realizing and seeing any color difference between my parents. Even though there was an obvious one, they were just my parents. It was so natural to me, I just didn't know anything different. And it wasn't until I was in sixth grade, I remember being on the playground. My mother came to the school for something. She had to take something into the office, and she was dressed in work clothes. She was a businesswoman. And I remember hearing some girls playing and saying, they just stopped in the middle of the playground, and they said, Yvonne's mother is white. And I heard that, and I remember just freezing and looking at her and just thinking about it. Literally, it was a moment frozen in time, and that's when it dawned on me. I thought, oh my goodness, you know what, they're right. She is different. She is different colors from my dad. And look at me, I'm kind of in the middle. And I remember it being sort of teased, being high yellow, being mellow yellow.
Oh,
was the term.
Really?
Mellow yellow. I was in an interracial school, so we had Hispanics, we had blacks, we had whites, we had Asians. But I really kind of didn't fit in cleanly in those groups. So I had friends of all different races, but to be teased because I was high yellow, because I really technically didn't fit anywhere, was interesting. But mainly because I was just so skinny, too. They'd call me olive oil, Popeye's wife, you know, olive oil. I was just rail thin. It didn't really impact me so much as it did, I think, my mother and her jobs and the jockeying she had to do to get around her bosses knowing that she was married to a black man. And she would not take any of the other kids to her job. She would only take me because I had the finer hair. It was lighter. And then when it stopped growing in lighter, it started to get darker. My mother dyed my hair blonde.
Oh, wow.
For a couple of years until I stopped it. And I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I remember asking her, I don't know, I was probably, fourth or fifth grade, and I stopped letting her dye my hair because I just asked her, why are we doing this? Oh, so that people will know you're my daughter, honey. Not realizing the impact that when I'm with her and her employers see her, one of her children, that they're going to make the association, well, she must have a white father. That's what my mother was trying to get them to think. So she wouldn't take my brother, who had sort of a soft curl afro. He was also light-skinned, but he had the hair, and my other two sisters had kinky hair. It was a fight. Oh, that hair was a fight. But, yeah, it was very interesting, the things she was trying to do to cover it up. And when it kind of dawned on me later, I just thought, oh, my goodness, that's too bad. That's ridiculous, but it's too bad because she had been fired from jobs once they found out my father was black and that she was married to a black man. So that was a little difficult for her. The only real impact I can see, I remember actually having it as a difficult time, was a conversation I had with my mother when she and I were talking about what box to check off for a race.
Oh, yeah.
When we were applying for high school. And they make you select from one box. And I just remember standing there looking at the application, and I said, Mom, which one do I select? Because I'm not any one of these. And she said, well, select white. I said, but I'm not all white. And she said, well, then select black. I said, but I'm not all black. So I said, I'm just going to check them both, or I'm going to check other.
Good for you.
Yes, and that was, I remember thinking, okay, I have to face this. I have to figure this out. And then one day on the phone, when I was talking to her about it, she said to me, Yvonne, you need to realize something. this is a white man's world, and you better figure out how to get along in it. Whatever's favorable for you, to you, you better figure out how to get along in it. And I said, you know what, Mom, that's not good enough. I think I have to just pass on my own merit. People have to accept me for me. I'll do the best I can to be educated and to behave properly, but I said, I can't just get along based on my skin color or not having the right skin color. I said, that's not going to work. So I guess I will have to figure it out. This was uncharted territory for her. She had no advice she could give me. I had to figure it out on my own, and she let me. Because it was really tough. But otherwise, I was really never discriminated against. I never had a problem. As long as you're behaving, you know, in an acceptable manner, it wasn't a problem. That became my focus. Just be the best person I could be and try to find a good field of interest and work and just live right. I wasn't going to let everything depend on my skin color, you know. I said, it has to be based on what my merit is, what my job skills are. I resented that remark, but that was clearly her mindset.
And maybe because of her generation and where she
was at. And her generation, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it is true. There was definitely some discrimination at that time, even here in California, even though we're more liberal than a lot of other states might have been. My mother was from Colorado, and so it wasn't so accepted. Her parents didn't like it so much, and she was dealing with that. But I said to her, too, what am I going to do about it, Mom? I am what I am because I didn't have a choice to come here. You're the one that married Dad. So what am I supposed to do about it? I have to work with what I'm given, you know. So she understood that.
When you did go, here's a white woman with multiracial children coming in to see your dad. Was there ever any looks or any discrimination from the guards or anybody there?
There was never discrimination from the guards. There were a lot of looks once we got into the visiting area. Oh, a lot of men were looking at my dad and my mother like, wow, okay, that's interesting. And then looking at us as a family, this blended family, this rainbow kind of family, because I have one younger sister who's darker than the rest of us, and mm-hmm. She's very exotic looking, beautiful, beautiful.
Oh, your whole family's beautiful.
Thank you. But she definitely had the darker features and dark hair, and it was such an interesting thing for them to just look at us and say, oh, wow, that's a blend of these two totally different backgrounds. But there was never any discrimination, just a lot of looky-loos.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot more common now.
Right, it is.
Where it doesn't matter that you see people just being people.
That's right.
Together.
Exactly. And part of me thinks a little bit, like when the black men would look at my dad, part of me feels like they're looking at him like, oh, you got a white woman. You know, like they were kind of, I think my dad used that a little bit as my mother, a little bit as a trophy wife kind of thing. Like, oh, you married a white woman kind of thing. It was very interesting. Not that that mattered to me, but just watching their reaction to it was something. And I, my dad did stay with my mother the longest out of all of his marriages. He's had a total of 7. He's married, his first wife was a black woman. His second wife was a Caucasian woman. And all the rest of his wives, the other 5, were all Chinese.
You know, and that's a really interesting point, too, because you're talking about the dichotomies between his life and yours, because he did lean towards Chinese women, and now how you work with Chinese children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was trying to do business with China, doing import and export of products, and he didn't speak the language. He's not educated. My father only got through the 8th grade, and that was through incarceration, because he left, I think he really only formally completed 6th grade. So he relied heavily on relationships with women for business, and he did do a few very successful deals, but he just, in his mindset, in his sort of larcenous behavior, in his criminal behavior, he would always take advantage of them or just ruin the relationship so that there would be no future deals. So he'd just go on to the next one. He made many trips to China, and he would recruit, and he'd pass himself off as this businessman because he had a corporation, and never mind that it was defunct, but he had the name, and he just would pass himself off as this wealthy American businessman. And then I work now with the Chinese. I do a lot of international student housing coordinating for them, for students who want to come here and live and go to school for the full year. And they live with a family, an American family, which is also kind of an interesting thing racially, because when they tell me I want to live with an American family, okay, well, our family hosts, and sometimes the Chinese family will tell me occasionally, this isn't often, but, you know, I have to ask what their preference is. Do you have any preference as to the type of family you want to live with. And sometimes they will say, I don't want my child to be placed with a black family. And then I say, well, you know, I'm black. And they just look at me and they're stunned. They're like, what?
Good for you.
Yeah. I just say, well, yeah, being an American means you could be a mix of anything. So I use that. I use my biracial background to sort of diffuse any misconceptions or preconceptions people may have, or their stereotypes. You cannot just label everyone. They're stunned when I tell them that. They're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, that would be fine. That would be fine. So anyway, it's very, very interesting. But my dad and I actually have that in common as a topic of conversation. My younger sister, Stacy, says to me, how do you have anything to talk to Dad about after the first 10 or 15 minutes? We talk about all kinds of things. And one of them is business with the Chinese. It's very interesting. And I've gotten along with all of his wives.
Well, I think you're bridging the gap in educating people.
Yeah, that could be, definitely. And he doesn't have any children by any of his Chinese wives, but I've always thought it might be interesting to see what they would look like if he did have one, but no children with him. He really just got married to have the relationship with the wife and use that as a stepping stone to business. So
you have an interesting background and an interesting family, and you've done really well. And I can say that knowing you now for over 10 years. As I said before, you've got a beautiful family. You guys always help other people. For you listeners, there's so much more that Yvonne does that we're not even going to address here. But her and her family really do a lot to help their community. Yvonne, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story, and I really appreciate the time you've spent.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure. I hope this interview will be encouraging to others that even though they may have a rough upbringing, coming up with parents that are in and out of their lives and that maybe have a criminal bent, hopefully their parents can learn from it and stop it. My parents did not, but you still can take a stand for who you are. You become your own person, and you know the difference between right and wrong, and you can still love your parents through it all. And in fact, my mother had me write a letter to the parole board when she was about to be released, because she said other ladies in there had commented how it was so refreshing to see her children still coming to see her and keeping a relationship with her in spite of the fact that she was in jail. And there's just something very strong about the parental bonds with kids and parents. And I think that once you, like you said, you define that line or those boundaries, when they know I can love you, but I'm not going to just fall in step with your lifestyle, but I'm going to love you and live my life too. When that's cleared up, you can move forward with the relationship. And that's very powerful, because he is still my dad. My dad is my dad is my dad. And I love him, and I'm loyal to him. And he has, in many ways, still looked out for me and blessed my life, which will go on for generations with our kids. So I do have a lot to be thankful to him for, and for my mother, for maintaining the lifestyle we had, even in my dad's absence. It was not easy for her. So it was a struggle, but people should know they can come out of it. They need to hang in there. Don't resort to illegal activity. Don't fall for following their footsteps. You can still live a good life and get beyond it if you just work hard and just have your faith, and God will provide.
And just to close the loop, your mom, she passed away?
Yes, my mother passed away in 2004.
And you had a relationship with her?
Yes. Oh, yes, I did. It was a tough love with her, too, in the end, because she still continued on with her criminal activity, doing credit card fraud, and she just was trying to survive, and even burned family members with taking out credit cards in their names. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And I think to a certain extent we recognize now, our siblings and I, we recognize there must have been some mental illness involved. There just must have been. It's just, she was well educated and had great job experience, and for her to resort to some of the things that she did, and against family members, was absolutely appalling. And we had to do an intervention with her because she was trying to take advantage of the family. Unbeknownst to us, a lot of this was done, well, all of it was done behind our backs, where she was taking out credit cards in our names. Yeah, it was terrible. And my sister had applied for a home loan and was shocked to find $20,000 of credit card debt in her name and her husband's name that she knew nothing about. And when she requested copies of the applications for the cards, we recognized the handwriting right away. And so we had to set up this intervention with my mother, and my sister recorded it. My sister Stacy had a little tape recorder in her bra, because my mother was just masterful at lying, creating this web of confusion so that she could get you off track. She was just so crafty. And we knew if we didn't record her, she would try to get out of it in some way. So I remember us sitting down. I know we're going on here and deviating a little bit, but I remember we had this little introduction to our meeting. My mother had no idea what the subject of our meeting was going to be. We just said we needed to get together. And my sister, Stacy, flew out here from Hawaii, and she stayed with my mom. And she had prepared for the meeting by going through my mother's personal financial records and files and stuff she had that my mother would never let anyone see, but while she was away at work, Stacy went through them and found so many things. Oh, it was atrocious. She found modified Social Security cards, modified birth certificates. She was applying for different things. I mean, it was so sick that you would do that to your kids, you know. But we sat down and laid some ground rules out. I did it because I was the oldest, and I just said, I want to let everyone know here we're here because we love each other and we have some very important, critical things to discuss. That's the first thing. The second thing is we don't want any lying. We need all truthfulness here. We cannot have any masquerading, no game playing. And the third thing is let's not talk over each other. Let's let the person speaking finish their thought. Because my mother was masterful at interrupting and rerouting you into a whole nother line of conversation. She would create this daisy chain of just clouds to try to get you off track, deflect the pressure off of her, right? The line of questioning off of her. She was masterful. But we had grown up with it, so we were on to her tricks. So we knew how to corner her. And I said, okay, I'm going to hand it off to Stacy now. And she sat back and said, Mom, is there anything you want to tell us? She thought she would let her just have an opportunity.
Right.
My mom sat back, and there was complete silence for a very long time, because at this point she's trying to figure out, what do they know? What do they not know? If I say too much, I could be hurting myself. Oh, my goodness. The wheels.
Like a kid, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The wheels were spinning. And she figured it out pretty quickly, because it was my sister, Stacy, who was taking the lead, so she knew it had to do with her. And finally she said, yes, I do have something to tell you. I took out credit cards in your name and used them to charge things because I was in between jobs and I'm older. People aren't willing to hire an older person and I had to survive. So I did it. And then my sister said, and what else? And I took out credit cards in your husband's name too. Oh my God. She said, that's right. You sure did. And I found out because I pulled my credit reports, I could qualify for a home loan, and I couldn't get it because of all of this debt. So we had this very big conversation with her. And in the end, we said, okay, well, here's what needs to be done in order to get these credit card charges out of my sister's name. You have to write a letter acknowledging that you did not have permission to apply for credit in her name. You have to acknowledge that you did not have permission, that you did it fraudulently. And then they are going to transfer those credit card balances in your name. And then, my sister said, beyond that, that's just going to take care of the immediate, putting that immediate fire out. But the bigger problem here is the fact that you did it. There's some underlying problems. There's some mental issues, some psychological issues that you would do that to your own children. Mm-hmm. Mothers don't usually do that. They try to help their kids. They try to support their kids. They try to get them along in life and give them a leg up in life. But you're trying to pull us down. So my sister required that she get counseling. And she said, and then the other thing is, she said, you have to repay this debt. What are you going to do to repay it? And my mother said, well, I'm doing the best I can. I'm working now. She said, but minimum payments are not going to cut it. My sister told her this. Here's what our suggestions are. Mm-hmm. And we went through this list of detailed things in her life. Here's what you're going to cut out of your budget. You're going to get rid of the cat because cats cost cat food. You know, it requires you have to feed them. You're going to get rid of your cable. That's a luxury. You're going to rent that extra bedroom out, and you're going to put all of this money towards paying off the credit card debt. All of your income tax refunds are going to go. I mean, we laid it out, and then we tied it up with a nice little bow, and we had to basically have some reinforcement, and we said, if you fail to do or refuse to do any of these things, Stacy was going to press charges. That was the sucker punch in the gut.
Right.
That said, you have to do this because you created a bad situation for your family, for your kids. You've really crossed the line. How could you do that to your own children? And then on top of that, what came out was the reason my mother had an opportunity to take out credit in their name was because my sister's mail was going to my mother's house when her and her husband were being transferred through the military to a different location. My mother would always be the home base. Big mistake, because she had been doing this for several years, because she was always getting the mail. And she got the mail one day for her neighbor. This is what came out later in the meeting. And she said, well, I did this for my neighbor, and he was kind of surprised that he could even get credit. He was sort of thankful to me in her own twisted mind now, right? I just looked at her and said, no, that's not okay. You understand what you did was wrong. I don't care if he was glad that he got the credit. What you did was wrong, and it's illegal. And you could go to jail for that. I mean, there's just this mindset. It stunned me that she had that mindset that she could justify it. She was in survival mode, and that's what she needed to do. And that's why she felt it was okay to do it. So she did, in fact, get the credit cards transferred in her name. The wording on her affidavit was very tricky. It took her a long time. We had to keep pressing her to do it because she would not acknowledge and use the word fraud. She refused to do that. So we had to fine-tune the semantics a little bit to get her to do it, but she finally did do it. She did curb back some of the expenses. She, however, had a difficult time with the counseling. She said, I'm so afraid that if I start that, it's like unraveling a baseball.
Yep.
And I won't be able to be put back together. I'll be left there completely undone and exposed and frozen. So it was tough. It was tough. But we did some family sessions that we tried to talk to her and work through some of these things. So anyway, the life of crime, oh my goodness. And the kids that try to deal with it, it's just a trip.
Well, I think it's great that your family came together and got to take care of that.
Yes, we did, even, as adults. It was just with families that was still going on, but we had to. We had to, and she didn't get to do that anymore. It's like, you have to put a stop to this. It's time. So, yeah, it was good. It was good having that family unification and that firm line in the sand and the support, because there were three of us there, the three sisters. My other younger sister was too little. She was like 9 or something to really participate in that and know what was going on. But we did unify as a as a set of the siblings to say, this is not okay. You're
harming it. She was raising the baby still.
Yes, she still had.
As an older, she was older.
Yep, wow. That's exactly right.
Very interesting. Well, again, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. This is a neat outreach you're doing. I think it'll help a lot of people. It's rough going through it at the time, but it can be done. It can be done.
Yeah, you're a prime example.
Do what's right. Don't follow their steps.
Thank you.
Okay.
You can hear more stories or share your story at prisonthehiddensentence.com. And follow us at Hidden Sentence on Facebook and Twitter. We are Prison, The Hidden Sentence, raising awareness one story at a time.